Hi, Lizzie.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for doing this. It's so awesome.
How was weekend practice?
Oh my God. I was laughing so hard when I texted you. I was like, so I had to cancel. And as you're very aware, practice got shifted. But I was laughing because it reminded me of like when you're TED Talk, when you like put up the timeline, you were like, well, practice here, I have to eat. And I was like, that's literally me. And I was like, so I have to cancel.
I totally understand. It's like, I remember having even the TED Talk, like you had to, before you could even try out, you had to confirm that you could make 4 different dates for like the rehearsal. And I was like, oh God, I was like, there's absolutely no way, but I'm just going to lie.
Yeah. Figure it out as you go. Wait, were you, okay, before we like get into this stuff, like when you went on that TED Talk, were you not like so nervous? I mean, you were like young kind of. I didn't like you were, what were you, a sophomore? That is so young.
I always remember that because my birthday, I think I gave the TED Talk like 3 weeks before my birthday, and I was like so hyped because I was able to say I was a teenager.
Yeah, that's so cool.
I was like blinded by my passion for the subject. So I didn't even like it. Nothing really registered. Like I think if I was giving a talk on like astronomy, I would have been so scared, but because I was talking about like something I cared so much about, I didn't get nervous.
So you guys, welcome back to the Lineup Podcast. This week we have Victoria Garrick, an ex-USC volleyball player, a libero, which we need to get into that because I don't really know much about volleyball. I'm a lacrosse player, so I don't really know what that position does, but she is an ex-volleyball player and she now speaks about her journey and her eating disorder and how it got her where she is today and how it can, you know, how you can recognize the signs, how you can help a friend out, and just different ways to, you know, break the stigma and talk about things that as athletes we don't usually talk about and that can be a little bit tricky. So we're gonna get right into it. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you realized you kind of had eating habits that were getting to be an issue.
Yeah. So when I look back on my, just all of my mental health issues and kind of how they occurred, it's interesting because I feel like I was hit with the trifecta, like together, anxiety, depression, and eating disorder. And they all kind of relate as well. I would say like really summing it up, I experienced performance anxiety pretty severely my freshman year at USC. Just the level of play, the, you know, team I was on that year was ranked number one, and there was just a lot of pressure. And I also was gaining weight and my body was changing because, you know, when you go start Olympic lifting and training as a D1 athlete, your body gets bigger, muscular, you gain more fat. And I just wasn't used to those changes. And so it was like, I was really anxious and also trying to diet and restrict. And so I think the lines got blurred. And then because I was so hungry, that is what kind of led to the development of my binge eating. And then going through those two things and feeling so ashamed about them and keeping them a secret, just led me down a deep, dark hole, which ended up in depression. So that's kind of how the three, went together. And
You were like, if I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna do it all, like I'm gonna do it big. And you just went for all three at once.
I was like, well, if we're gonna have to do these things, let's do them all now.
Right, like any division athlete, like you're not gonna go half in, you're gonna go all the way in. Also, side note, like you walked on to the volleyball team at USC, right? Can you take us through that a little bit? Like what did that look like? I mean, that's crazy, and they're very, very good.
Yeah. So I was a recruited walk-on. So I committed in high school, but with the understanding that I wouldn't be receiving a scholarship, unlike traditional walk-ons who, you know, go to school and then like knock on the coach's door and get a tryout and make the team like the Rudy way. That was my process. And honestly, I mean, we don't have to get into the college recruiting politics. I don't even know how it is like for lacrosse, but with volleyball, I mean, first of all, there's a misconception that every college athlete's on a full ride scholarship. Like I think people not in the athletic community just think like, oh, you're a college athlete, like you get everything paid for. And it's just not the case, especially even if kids are getting scholarships at schools that don't have a lot of funding or big budgets, they're not getting free gear. They're not getting free food.
Yeah, we get scooters. We get scooters here at school. We don't get them, but that's what everyone thinks. Like, when you come to Maryland, you ride a scooter, but you pay for it. And when I got here, everyone's like, that's so cool. They give you, like, mopeds. I'm like, I mean, they definitely didn't give it to us. They gave us a t-shirt when we got here, and it, like, every student athlete got it. It's, like, one you could probably get at the bookstore. But they're like, that's so cool. You get everything handed to you, and it's just not. It's not like that.
And it varies so much depending on the school. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I bring this up because my position, the libero position that you mentioned, there's one scholarship for a libero every 4 years, whereas every year they could be bringing in hitters or, you know, whatnot. So that scholarship was signed to a girl the year below me. And so that money for that one position was slotted. And if you want to, and they need more, you can't just have mm-hmm. one libero defensive specialist on the team. You need like three or four. And so the other three are typically not on scholarship. And so mm-hmm. that was me, and that was kind of the process. And fortunately, I'm so grateful and privileged that, you know, I was able to go to school without a scholarship. And so because I wanted to play at a high level, you know, I just sort of realized, and my parents realized, that it would be great to get a scholarship, but it would be really difficult at the same time. And I didn't end up getting one.
Yeah. I mean, it worked out for you. That's so cool. And like you said, you were fortunate enough that you were able to still do it without the scholarship. So that's amazing. So once you got to USC and life was changing, and like you said, you kind of got the trifecta and everything kind of like hit the fan, what was like the first thing you recognized was just kind of going off the rails? What was your first sign?
I think the first thing that was just the biggest shock to my life was the crazy schedule, the demanding schedule, and then the strictness of the team rules. Mm-hmm. And so I remember being in summer, and I got there in July. So you go before all your friends for a fall sport. Yeah. And we had 6 a.m. lifts. So I was waking up at like 5:30 to be dressed and ready to start lifting at 6. And I was taking summer class, and I was super tired. And like, I've never been a napper, but when you're a college athlete, like, you nap.
Yeah. Any chance you can get.
Yeah. Literally before college, I was like, who naps? Yeah. School is like every day I need my nap. And so I remember one day, like, I took a nap, and I guess we had a team meeting, and I forgot, and like my mom called me because I had told her, like, oh, I'll call you on my way to this meeting. And so she woke me up, and I panicked and like got to the meeting, and I was like almost barely late, but I was on time, and I just felt the fear. Mm-hmm. And like, so from just weeks of being there in the summer, season hadn't even started, school hadn't even started, I was like, holy shit, like, I have to be places on time. I had a lot of things to do. I can't be late. I got to be on top of it. And I don't want to break the rules, let anyone down. And so that's, I think, what really started sparking my overthinking and anxiousness.
Yeah. I mean, that's so hard when you're 17, 18 years old, you're thrown out there to do it by yourself. Or in high school, you didn't really have that schedule. You weren't stuck to like a strict routine. You were kind of like, you know, going here and there. Like you said, you didn't need a nap. You didn't have to like feed yourself. Much easier and much different, especially like, I'm grateful I play a spring sport, and so I got the freshman fall at least to kind of like get on my feet and warm up a little bit, whereas like you said you were there in the summer and you were just thrown into it and you kind of had to figure it out. So in a friend, say, like, okay, so you came and you spoke at Maryland, I think it was my junior year or sophomore year,
one of the two, and
was that senior year? Yeah, so it must have been literally right before COVID hit. But when you came and talked, one of my best friends struggled with an eating disorder, and she talks about it now. She uses it kind of in the same way as you do to help people who are going through similar things. And I remember sitting there and being like, oh my gosh, like, I was so blind to so many signs, and there are so many things I missed. And I felt like a horrible friend, and I would like turn to her, and I was like, I was tearing. I was like, I'm so sorry that I wasn't there for you. And she was like, there was just no way you could have known. And I want to know, as a friend or as a significant other or any family member, how can you see those signs and recognize them early in people?
Well, I admire, you know, how much you care about your friend, that you want to know the signs and help other people know the signs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, before I even attempt mm-hmm. to answer, I think it's important to know that people with eating disorders or who are depressed or anxious, can be really good at hiding it, and it can be really hard to detect. And the happiest people can be the most unhappy. I remember one time in the locker room, one of my teammates said that she talked about me in her therapy session and was like, there's this girl on my team who's so bubbly and I want to be like her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you think that of me? Because it's like, I felt so broken on the inside, but I must have been good at putting a face up. So first of all, it's no one's fault if, you know, you didn't know. But in terms of, you know, being on the lookout, I think the best thing is to just communicate and always check in with your loved ones, you know, like, how are you? And instead of like a, hi, how are you? Like a, hey, so how are you doing? What is this week? Like, what has this week been like for you? Like really taking a beat to check in on people, because then you're giving them that chance to open up. And you're also kind of like checking your bases of, I am checking in with my friends and asking them how they are. And if they don't choose to be open, that's out of your control. So I think communication is a great way. And then of course, like, you know, there are the standard signs like isolation, or if you notice that there's changes in their daily habits or their attitude or the way their appearance, you know, those are the more obvious signs and ways you can detect the mental health deteriorating in your loved ones. And I think online at like either NIDA or just the Mental Health America will have some of those basic signs. That's
cool. Yeah, I like that. I like what you said, just checking in on your friends. I think it's so easy nowadays to kind of just be like, how are you? Like, how are you doing? And like keep walking, but like genuinely taking a second and being like, no, like, how are you doing? I don't be like, oh my God, are you fine? Like, you're not, you don't look like, don't jump them. But like, if it's a little bit hard, you press them a little bit to, you know, get to that hurt. I think that's okay. So I liked what you said about genuinely checking in and taking time with your friends. Okay. So fast forward a little bit. Now you've opened up, you've spoken on it, you beat this eating disorder, but every day I'm sure is not like, oh, I beat this eating disorder, I can eat whatever I want, whatever. How does it look in your day-to-day now? Like, what do you, do you still have those thoughts? And if you do, how do you get past them? How do you turn your mind off when you're eating?
Well, it's interesting because, yes, there's truth in that every day I'm going to have a thought or make a comment to myself or see something that reminds me of an old habit or something. But that said, like, I do feel at a place where I do wake up and I have a great relationship with food and I love to eat and I'm happy and I don't have negativity kind of surrounding my feelings and thoughts about my body and food. I would say like intuitive eating has been a huge piece of that. Like just knowing that I will allow myself to eat whatever I want, is a huge safety like net for me. You know, I think with years of restriction and dieting, I am immediately triggered by not allowing myself to have things or not thinking I can have things. So like I have a huge pantry drawer of like, I mean, everything you could imagine, Cheez-Its, munchies, cinnamon toast crunch, macaroni and cheese. And most of it like goes stale, but it's the fact that I have it. I am allowed to eat it whenever I want. If it's going to make me feel good, I have that choice. Is what like I think keeps me on track, because I trust myself to make choices that are going to make my body feel great, are going to make me feel good. When you really think about it, no one wants to eat foods that make them feel not great inside. And as a result, like I do gravitate to more nutrient dense foods. When I'm going on a run, I love something more nutritious. But then of course I allow myself to eat all sorts of foods, regardless of if they are deemed as quote unquote junk or not by society.
Yeah. And I think part of that probably just comes from you being an athlete. Like, you know what your body feels good on. You know what your body feels crappy on. You're not going to eat a family size bag of like, I don't even know, like Funyuns before you go play a volleyball game. Like, that's just not really how it works. But you also know that if you want to enjoy a family size bag of Funyuns like that, like, it's okay to have a good balance. And that's something my mom taught me from a young age, was just like, you don't have to go crazy one way or the other. Like, I know sometimes I'd be like, oh, well, I didn't practice today, so I'm not gonna eat that like brownie, or, you know, I ran 7 miles today, so I'm gonna, you know, eat chicken and veggies. I'm gonna be good because I already ran and blah, 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 whatever it looks like. My mom did a really good job teaching me from a young age that just a balance is like what you need. And you just, not to go crazy one way or the other. And I think you've like figured that out. And I think it's awesome to like, I loved what you said about just like knowing it's there and it might go stale, but it's just the principle behind like you're controlling it. It's not controlling you. Like you have absolute control over what you put in your body and how it makes you feel.
Right. And I don't try to reward or shame myself for what I eat. So like, you know, you mentioned, you know, the, if you were to go on a long run or whatnot. And so like, I've really eliminated food being, you know, like a reward, like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to give myself this because I worked out, or, oh, I'm not going to have this because of a dress I'm wearing. Like it is just completely what's going to satisfy me. And satisfaction involves taste. It involves feeling. It involves emotional satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm a big advocate of intuitive eating.
Yeah. And I talked about this on another one of my podcasts with someone else, but just when I went through my ACL injury, I restricted myself of so much food. Like I was like, oh my God, I'm not working out. Like I cannot eat what I used to eat. I need to do abs for an hour a day. I'm not like, again, and I just lost complete touch. Like I've never really struggled with like my body and food and like how that relationship has affected me. But in that moment, in that first few months, I was like, well, I cannot gain a single pound. And then I got the opposite. And I was so unhealthily skinny that it was like, when I did get back to working out, I couldn't do anything. And I was like, this is not working. And so that intuitive eating, it's true. Like just doing what your body tells, like how you feel good in the moment and eating what you enjoy. And also food is such a social thing. Like I just love going out to eat with my friends and cooking with my friends. And like just sitting over like a good meal is so important for like your mental health. Like it's fun.
Yeah, I agree. And it should be something that we enjoy. We should allow ourselves to enjoy French fries and a hamburger or a salad or whatever we're eating. Like, we can have feeling and get excited about food. And I think people think if you have a healthy relationship with food, you should never be thinking about it or care too much, but it's the opposite. Like I woke up today, like so excited for what I could decide to eat.
I know. I made my dinner plans for the week on like Sunday night and I've been thinking about them all week just because I'm excited to cook them. And I'm excited just to like I said, spend that time with my roommates and just like enjoy food and just enjoy like what it brings to me. Okay. So let's get into a little bit more about like your body image and social media. And this platform you've been given is awesome. This opportunity is incredible. But how has it affected you? How has it challenged you or helped you with your body image and stuff like that?
Well, I've been kind of growing and changing as my platform's grown and changed. So, you know, I started working on my social media accounts and really building that out when I was in school. And I wasn't even really open about my body image struggles. Like when I gave my TED talk, I only talk about anxiety and depression. And of course I talk about social pressure, social media pressure and a beauty standard kind of, but I don't really dive into it because I wasn't ready to share that part yet. But with like, you know, the evolution of my pages and, you know, certain opportunities and, you know, with the binge eating story, it's so interesting because I did a magazine feature. It was like a really cool opportunity. I hadn't done anything like this before. It was seemed so glamorous and I did it. And they basically, you know, this video came out. I had maybe, I'm a really open person. So if you talk to me, I'm going to give you everything. And they did this thing where they were like, we're just going to record an interview with you for an hour. And then we're going to like cut the best things up for like a 2-minute clip. And so I'm talking and, you know, you talk and it's in context and then they cut up this video and release it. And it's just not the portrayal I was ready for at all. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like revealed my issues with food. And I remember being like, so embarrassed when it came out, I was not ready at all. And I didn't promote it anywhere. And then, I started to get all these messages from people saying, oh, I saw this video that this magazine did of you, and this is exactly how I feel. And, this helped me so much and this changed me. And I remember thinking like, whoa, you know, I was ashamed for that truth to be out there. I wasn't ready. And then it was like, I was thrown into it, whether I was ready or not. And I saw the reaction. And that's kind of what gave me the confidence to post more about my body image and issues with food.
Yeah. I feel like that happens more than we think. I feel like the way you said people were messaging you and being like, oh, I'm feeling this way too. Chances are if we're feeling that way, there's someone else out there that feels that way. So the fact that you were able to, without even kind of knowing it, step out of your comfort zone, and it sucks that it like wasn't on your terms and on your time, but the amount of people that needed to hear what you were brave enough to say is awesome and definitely helped so many people. We did this thing with my team, and it was like a few weeks ago. We just sat down and like talked body image and eating and how we can reframe things. You know, when you look at social media, you see models, you see everything but reality almost. Like, yeah, you can slap a filter on there, but like most of the times, like what we're looking at is, as athletes, not reality for us. And a girl in our team said something really awesome. She was like, as college athletes especially, it's super hard because you have these pro lifters and these pro athletes who are ripped and defined and all that stuff. But then you also have like the skinny, like little, like petite girls. But as college athletes, we fall something in between, and we, you know, have a hard time identifying what side we're supposed to be on, if there's a right side, a wrong side, what looks right, wrong, what's edited or not. And how we talked a lot about how we can reframe when you do see a picture, the thought that goes through our heads, how you can reframe, you know, oh, my legs look so fat and that, to like, my legs are carrying me. Like, they're not running miles a day. They're not lifting this much weight. My legs are doing incredible, incredible things. Is that something you practice a lot, like reframing when you see these like pictures?
Definitely. That was the biggest change I made with my own approach to my body, was just taking the priority and moving it to the action, what my body does for me, not how my body looks. And we are just taught as women from a really young age, it's all about how we look, that, you know, we can show up in this world as long as we're skinny and pretty, and that's the priority. And I just had to realize that it wasn't. And I needed to put more attention and gratitude towards what my body was allowing me to do. And it's a mechanism for performance. We can't play our sports without our bodies. And, you know, and going back to your thought of, well, there's these pro athletes and there are these models. And so it's like, well, where are we? And I also think there's this idea that like, we have to look a certain way to be okay with what we're doing. So it's like, you have to have a six pack and be really muscular if you're going to embrace that, or, but you can't have, you know, abs.
Yeah,
and
like,
then like
too ripped, it's like not girly. But if you're like not ripped,
feel like you need to have an exact type to feel like you're athletic, or you're thin, or you're this or that. And the truth is that we have to get away from this idea that there's a body type. There isn't a body type. Look at your teammates, for example. I'm sure you all have different bodies. You all have different heights. Some of you, you know, gain muscle easier. Others of you don't. Like, I played with so many girls, and we have all different body types, and they all led us to amazing things. And so this idea that we can finally be okay as female athletes once we have the six pack is also not healthy.
Right. Definitely. I remember I used to be like so insecure, and I like still joke about it just because it's like funny. Like, my hands are huge, and I used to be so insecure about it. I was like, I don't have like petite little girly hands. Like, it's so embarrassing, but I can palm a basketball, and like, I can do some like pretty cool things. And like, when I whip that out, like, that is, I appreciate that. So like, it's one of those, like, I joke about it, but it's like, everybody, to your point, that everyone's body is so different. And yeah, we all might play the same sport, but we're not all the same position. Our bodies are built for different things. And, you know, even if we do play the same position, we have different strengths, and it comes from different bodies, and it's incredible. And you said something in your podcast that you just recently did, Burning in Hell. And you said, like, you can't love the real version of yourself if you're continuously editing it. And I absolutely love that. It's so true. Like, again, slap a filter on it, because like, maybe the lighting's not good, but there's a difference between slapping a filter on something and like, you know, editing it to when you do see people in real life, it's like you feel a little like embarrassed. But like, I loved that sentence. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, it's just creating more insecurities, because you're, you know, you're falling farther into this idea that you need to be fixed in some way. And that's certainly how I felt with editing. I was always worried if like, I remember when I first started dating my boyfriend, I would like edit my body, and he would always be like, oh, send me the pictures, I want to Instagram them. And I would like, of course, edit them before I sent them to him. And I was like, oh my God, I hope he doesn't notice that this is how my body really looks.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And you're like, okay, well, we'll take them on my phone. And then like, you're like picking and choosing which ones you want to send. But it's like, your boyfriend, like, he doesn't care. And he like knows every like part of you. Like, he doesn't care. But it's so funny, because like, so many people
do it. I had such bad body image issues, because it's so liberating to just like pose for a picture and not go check to see how I look in it. Because again, I'm like, that's not the priority. Like, looking good is not going to be the priority of my life. And I think in general too, like, it is just something I love to explain to people is, what is the end game? So you're going to get a certain level of pretty and skinny that what? That everyone in the world says, oh, you are the most gorgeous person you've ever seen. That doesn't happen. Whoever is your, you know, icon woman, everyone disagrees. Yeah. Oh no, not her. Her face is too this. She's too this. She doesn't have blah, blah. There's never going to be a unanimous opinion. And so I just kind of realized too, like there's no end game except just constant self-hatred and being upset. And so I just tapped out of the race and I'm.
Yeah. No, I love that. That's something that I really, really live by because like you're saying, it's so true. Nobody's ever going to agree on quote unquote, this perfect body or this like perfect image. Nobody's going to agree. So like doing what makes you happy. And yeah, of course it's fun to get like dressed up sometimes. And it's fun to feel beautiful. Like everyone wants to feel beautiful, but when it puts your mental health at risk and when you're dropping everything to like be the most beautiful person, that's when it gets to a point where it's like, I'm not going to run that race. Like, I am happy. I'm not going to spend my whole life being like, oh, I need to look beautiful, blah, blah, blah. I am happy with how I look and what I'm eating and how my body feels, most importantly. That, to me, is, like, the most important thing is how I'm feeling. And if I decide I want to look cute while I'm feeling good, then I do. And if I want to look like a slob but I'm feeling good, then I will. And it's just, like, it just depends on the day. So you recently did, oh, not recently, it's, again, COVID time, like, it's all one thing. So, like, kind of over COVID, you did a podcast with April Ross, and I was listening to it, and something that you said in it, and she was, like, she just won, like, a silver medal, and she was talking about how everyone, after she won, was just kind of, like, oh, I'm so sorry, like, you'll get them, like, you got this, like, bounce back. And she's, like, wait, guys, I just won a silver medal in the Olympics, like, that's not of course it's going to sting. You didn't win, but like, that's not a, you'll get them next time. Like, that's incredible. And like, I think a lot of society just like doesn't see the work we put into things as athletes. They just see the medals and they just see like the end game. I know sophomore year we lost in the national championship and the feedback I got was the same thing. Like, okay, yeah, it sucks. Like, I get it. Like, it's hard. But nobody acknowledged the work that my team had put in and the work, the hours that we spent to get to where we were. And yeah, it sucks. Nobody likes to lose again, especially at like at such a top level. But I feel like we need to appreciate more the work that athletes are doing.
Yeah, you know? I thought it was powerful when she said that as well. Like, we have a society where if you're not the winner, you're not first, it's like a failure of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I think it is, you know, everyone needs to move at their own pace. Like my heart just, when I heard you say that you guys lost in the national championship, because I remember when we were the number one seed in the tournament and we lost in the Elite Eight and it was this huge upset. And like, I still can't watch that game. And like, I had to tell me, well, congrats because you were seeded number one. I'm like, well, we didn't win, but it is refreshing to also, I think the message in this is like, just because you don't get the result you wanted doesn't mean all your hard work has gone to waste, you know? And I think that's the important thing is it needs to be process oriented. Like, you are going to walk away from whatever it is feeling different, fulfilled and empowered from your process, regardless of if you get what you want in the end.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that, I mean, it goes into your story too, and just all the hard work you put into it. And I'm sure there were days where you were like, this is draining. This is so exhausting. Like, and you didn't really see the end goal that you wanted right that second. And you weren't like feeling incredible right that second, but like the small wins, the small successes of just, like you were saying, feeling good in your own skin and winning the day-to-day battle with food. That is a daily success that, I think a lot of people just need to like recognize more, whether it's with food, whether it's with, and I'm not sitting here being like every time you lose, like, oh, you're a winner. Like, you're great. Like, not everybody wins all the time. That's not how it is. That's not life. And that's okay. That's a whole nother thing, but just recognizing small successes, no matter what it looks like. So on the gram, I asked people just kind of like what they wanted to hear from you. And I got a few questions and I want to just ask you three questions that were sent to me that I think, you know, people will want to hear about. So what is something that you would tell your younger college version you?
Gosh, I get this question a lot and I wish I had a sick AF answer. I really should like spend a day coming up with the best answer for this. But I really just wish that I was more open to
all the curveballs and highs and lows of life. When I entered school, I think I thought that I know everything. I'm smart. I'm going to be a college athlete. Like, you know, I know everything. And when you're 18, you just don't know everything. And I feel like that's why I was so caught off guard with the anxiety. And I was so overwhelmed and I resisted so much change in my life, as opposed to just showing up and being like, I have so much to learn. There's so much I don't know. It's okay if I'm not perfect right away. And so I wish I had more grace with myself. I think that's a good way to say it. I wish I had more grace with myself as I went through those changes.
But it's funny because when I was in high school, my mom would like say stuff to me. And I was like, I know, mom, like, I don't need like to hear this. Like, I know everything. I'm 17 years old. Like, I know exactly what I'm doing. And then I got to college and I'd call my mom and be like, so the dishwasher's not running. She'd be like, okay. Like, it's so funny. You shift gears completely.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't I watch her steam broccoli every night? Because now I have broccoli and I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. You call your mom and they're probably so annoyed. But it's true. Like, you think you know everything and you think you're like this big tough guy. And we are like, we're tough girls, definitely. But sometimes, yeah, you just need to allow yourself to learn and just be a little vulnerable. Okay. Someone wants to know, how do you handle different emotions and various feelings and a bunch of different personalities in a team like volleyball through college and also on top of like managing your own stuff? Like,
yeah, it's tough. I've been a part of team cultures that are great and that are not great. And I think, that's just a reality of sports everywhere you go and it changes with the season and the coaching staff. And, I think, one of the biggest things I had to learn, and I straight up didn't really fully understand this until like the end of my senior season, probably like with a week left in senior season, I was like, oh,
perfect timing.
and what I realized was that I cannot control others. Yeah. And when I say that, I mean like, you can't make a teammate communicate the way you want on the court or handle her or his emotions differently or try harder or be more motivated when you're down in the game. Like, you can't. And no matter how much energy you put in and how much you are like, okay, hey, how can I help us out on this play? Or how can I give you more confidence here? How can I bring your spirits up when you're in a rut? Like, there's only so much you can do. And I think I spent so much time focused on trying to make my teammates the players I thought that they could be or whatnot, or trying to get the approval from certain teammates, like wanting them to validate me as a player for them. Like, you know, we had a lot of hotshot, amazing players on our team. And I was a walk-on and I always was a walk-on. And so, you know, I think I also wanted that nod of like, you know, those compliments and that approval from them. And I had to realize that I'm not going to get it. And, so I think when it comes to navigating all the emotions in a big team, like, show up and be the teammate you want to be the person you want to be, treat people kindly, work really hard. And that is all you can do at the end of the day. And then kill them with kindness. And that was one of my mottos as well, is just kill them with kindness. Because, you know, people who are unkind need that the most.
The person I literally just had on last week, the exact same thing. He was like, I just killed all my teammates with kindness. But it goes outside the field too. Like, I loved it when you said, I couldn't control my teammates. You can't. You can't control anyone, and you can't control what happens to you in this life. You can't control how people are going to act around you. You literally can control yourself and your emotions and how you are feeling. And so, yeah, making sure that you are checked in and you can encourage the people around you, but, you know, you're not in control of them, and you can make the situation whatever you want to make it, but you can't force someone else to see or act the way you want them to act. So that's awesome. And I love that. And yeah, just kill people with kindness on or off the field. Like, I don't know who's listening to this and who needs to know to be nicer, but yeah, be nicer. Okay. So, two more questions for you. The one is mine and the one, came from the gram. So the other one is, what is the coolest thing that being Victoria Garrick, quote unquote, has allowed you to do, this platform and this like fame, you want to call it, what is something that you've been able to do that, you know, 3 years ago you were like, I never would have been able to do that? Probably so much.
I've never gotten this question either. I think the opportunity to have either conversations or just relationships with people that, you know, I probably otherwise would have never gotten a response to or would have never gotten
to be in contact with, you know, like once you start working hard and making a name for yourself in whatever industry it is, it does open doors for you. And I mean, there's just some incredible athletes and people that like I've gotten to shake hands with and collaborate with. And like, I think about Real Pod too, like when I get an awesome guest and we sit there for an hour and I get to ask them anything I want. Like I just interviewed Chelsea Cutler and that will be coming out this month. And I just think about how like,
that's so cool.
Probably so many of her fans would just like love to ask her anything for 45 minutes.
Yes. I'm so obsessed with her. I'm so jealous.
Yeah. So certain things like that are definitely those pinch me moments.
Yeah. That's awesome. I was just talking to my boyfriend yesterday about this and he was listening to the one from last week and he was just like, I think it's really awesome that you get to sit with these people and just learn. And I was like, it's literally like for an hour a week, I just get to be mentored by all these different people, and all these people bring something different to the table, and they bring something that's so important but so different. Like I just last week was with Matt Stover, an ex Ravens player, but like he's not talking about the same thing you're talking about. Neither is more or less valuable, but so important. And if I take one thing, if anybody takes one thing from everyone we're talking to, that's awesome and that's incredible. So I mean, not completely because I'm not meeting Chelsea Cutler, but I get what you're saying where, yeah, just sitting with these people and having real conversations and honest conversations and learning things that you wouldn't otherwise get the chance to learn, and you can listen, but having this real connection with people is unmatched. That's really, really cool. I thought you were gonna say like, I don't know, like some like crazy like shoot or something, but that's true.
There's probably like one or two that are like DMs that are in the works for the pod, but mm-hmm. I don't want to jinx anything.
No, yeah, no. That's really cool.
Tyler's for sure one of my like, oh my god.
Yeah, I've seen her in concert so many times. I'm actually very jealous of you. That's really cool. And then my final question is something that I ask everyone that comes on. It's just your best piece of advice, either athletically or life.
Oh gosh, I have like one that is two ways to explain it. So I'm guessing a lot of athletes listen to this podcast, and you know, as athletes, we're told to like visualize our success, and you know, you're told like a when you win, not if you win, like, you know, plan for success. And I think that that can create a lot of anxiety, and I just don't think it's healthy. And you know, there are two main things that like help me learn this piece of advice that's been hugely helpful to me is, you know, first of all, I had all this anxiety about like being a starter and what I wanted, and it consumed me. Like if I don't get the starting spot, it's gonna be so embarrassing. I'm gonna be a failure. Everything's for nothing. And I remember I had a therapy session where my therapist had me just humor me, you know, close your eyes. Let's imagine you don't get the spot. Okay, what happens? And I'm like, okay, well, I'll
cry.
I'm yes. so mad. She's like, okay, then what? And I'm like, okay, well, you know, the next day I'll probably still cry. She's like, okay, what about 2 weeks later? And I'm like, you know, maybe I'll be like going to class. And like, you know, you talk through and I'm like, okay, well, like my family will still love me. I'll get married one day. Like, you know, I'm like, yeah. My life's not actually going to end if I don't get the starting spot or the thing that I want. And so like, that was one way I kind of learned that lesson. And then another way was when I did get the starting spot, I texted my mentor, Nicole Davis, who's the former USC Trojan and two-time Olympian. So super grateful to have her.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think I texted her and I was like, any advice for the game tonight? Something like that. And she said, you're going to make mistakes tonight.
Oh my God. Cries.
Yeah. She followed it up with, and when you do, because everyone makes mistakes and no one's perfect, let them roll over you, reroute. How can you redirect? How can you learn from that mistake? And I think it was just my reminder that like, I needed that reality check before that game, because like I was putting expectations on myself that I'm going to play perfect and I'm not. No one is perfect. Yeah. And so I think like one of the best pieces of advice I can share is, you know, you can have a backup plan. You can entertain a plan B. You can emotionally go through what the worst case scenario would be like and accept that mentally. And I truly believe you will actually show up and perform better in the clutch moment when you've made peace with what the worst case scenario is than when you're fearing the worst case scenario and you can't even focus on succeeding.
That's really good. That's really, really good. I feel like that's so true, because a lot of times you're so tunnel vision on your goals, which is good in a way. Like you want to be driven, you want to see these goals and see these successes, but yeah, you have to understand that things don't always work out how they're supposed to, and people fail and things don't go like planned. And having that like peace, like you were saying, like with, okay, like I got this, I got a plan B. And same thing as you, Victoria, before I saw the sports psychologist at Maryland, I was like not okay with a plan B. So when I told Macy I was playing for the US team, and I was like, I don't have a plan B after this. Like, what, where do you go after this? I can't walk. Like, and then she, same thing, was like, let's just talk through it. Like, there is more, and you are more, and you're going to get back to the field, and you're going to probably not remember how to run. I couldn't jump when I got back to the field. I was so unathletic, and I was like, I don't understand how I got here. And it's like, having those goals is so important, and but how you get to the goals is going to be different, and it's going to look different. And you might plan out, okay, well, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and I'm going to, you know, set my goals up this way, but that's not probably how they're going to pan out. And you have to be flexible with how you get to your goals, and you're going to fail along the way. I love what you said about, like, you're going to mess up tonight, and that's okay, and being okay with that, and being okay with, like, getting to your goals and whatever that looks like.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm glad that you also had similar revelations.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. Well, this has been so good, and I'm really, really happy and thankful that you just sat down and talked with me. I know a lot of people are super stoked for this one. My teammates were like so excited about it. So thank you so, so much for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Lizzie. It's been so great speaking with you, and I'm glad that, you know, you are doing this. So important. And now I'm sure you see there's so much more you can do if it's not the USA team.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this again. I absolutely love speaking with you, and have so much fun with Chelsea Cutler. I'm living through you for that.
Thank you. It already happened, and I was so nervous. I think I did terribly, but hopefully we can fix it in editing.
Yeah, edit it all. Okay, thank you so much.
Bye.